And this is WYLL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. Good morning. My name is David Inge. We're pleased that we were able to bring to you live coverage of this vote that's just taken place this morning in the Illinois House. As Rich Bradley just said, the House has voted to impeach the governor, Rod Blagojevich. This was unanimous but one. One member voted no. Everyone else voted yes. And now it's a story that we will continue to follow. And in fact, there are some reports this morning that the governor himself will have a statement later this afternoon, 2 o'clock at the Thompson Center in Chicago. So certainly if we are able to bring that to you live, we will do that. Here we have a little opportunity to begin some of our own analysis to try to talk about what will happen next. And we're pleased to have here in the studio with us Rick Winkle, someone who has been following Illinois politics for quite a while now. He's a visiting senior fellow of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He is also adjunct professor in the College of Law. He served in the Illinois State Senate between 2003 and 2007. Before that, he was an Illinois State Representative between 95 and 2003. And before that, he served on the Champaign County Board. And we're pleased that he could come and spend a little bit of time talking with us. Thanks very much for being here.
Glad to be here.
Many things we could talk about here. Maybe I'll just give you an opportunity to give us a general sort of reaction to the events of today.
Well, the reaction is the events are fast moving. But I think they've been done very thoroughly, very deliberatively, and I believe fairly. I've been watching the process carefully. After the arrest of the governor, Speaker Madigan, within a week, announced the formation of a special investigative committee. Made it very clear that due process would be respected, constitutional rights would be protected throughout this process. And indeed, I believe that's what they've done. They've allowed, invited the governor to come and testify, to attend. Instead, the governor's attorney has attended and has had the right to cross-examine, to call witnesses, even was given a week to prepare a response. So I think the process that resulted in the final report of the Special Investigative Committee issued January 8 yesterday that moved forward unanimously by the 21 members of that committee to the full House has resulted in the vote that you saw today. I think that the report shows a systematic abuse of power, mm-hmm. and that's the hinge by which the whole motion here is hinged upon is weaving this largely circumstantial, but in the totality of the circumstances, all the different events that have occurred, not just simply the arrest, which is obviously probably the most stunning part to me, but just the whole idea that there's ongoing federal investigations and the governor would engage in this behavior, rushing to get in some pay-to-play fundraising before the new ethics law goes into effect January 1, 2009, which now it has, is just extraordinary. It's stunning. But it goes way beyond that. And remember, this is not a criminal investigation. This is not a criminal procedure. It parallels the federal prosecution. That is criminal. That is a criminal proceeding. What you're seeing now in the House is a result of constitutional powers vested solely in the House of Representatives, where they have the sole ability to do this type of investigation, to see if there is cause for impeachment. And based on this report that came out yesterday from the committee and hearing the members today speak, they've embraced that report 114-1. And so it's not surprising in the sense that we have a vote to impeach. I guess what's surprising is the events that finally led up to it with the arrest of Rod Blagojevich on December 9.
Certainly a lot of the attention and the coverage has been focused on the most sensational allegation, the charge that the governor was trying to turn the process of appointment of the man or woman, whoever would take the place of the president-elect, that he was trying to turn that to his advantage. That's not the only allegation that has been made. Do you have some sense of the broader sweep of what is being charged?
Well, in addition to the trying to sell the Senate seat to the highest bidder and also trying to get Chicago Tribune editors fired, and also trying to extort Children's Memorial Hospital, holding up funds, state funding, in return for a kickback of campaign contributions. In addition to all of that, we're also looking at efforts to sidestep the General Assembly. We've heard about this complaint for years now. Certainly when I was a legislator, I saw it and experienced it, where this administration, if it doesn't get its way, it would sidestep the authority of the legislature. And I think what you see here, that, for instance, the expansion of family care, while many of us might argue in favor of expanding family care, providing state-run government health care coverage to the working poor, there is a process. And when the legislature specifically rejects that proposal, the governor then cannot do an end run and try to implement that program on his own without legislative approval and without specific appropriations to fund it. He did indeed try to do that, and as well as other things involving the flu vaccine, where the governor knew that there was no way that the flu vaccine could have been received and distributed, yet spending millions in taxpayers' money to do this for no reason other than self-aggrandizement and political gain in his sense. There's just a whole list of things that the legislature can look at where the governor has attempted to take the process and move around it and to run the state without legislative approval, without the appropriations. You know, a dictator could do that, and we don't have a dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And that's what the legislature has put its foot down and said, look, enough is enough. On top of these criminal allegations, we also see a systematic behavior, a pattern of behavior that demonstrates very conclusively in the totality of evidence that there is a pattern of abuse of power by this governor. And I think that's the foundation upon which they voted today.
So as far as the legislature is concerned, in the heart of the impeachment effort has to do not so much with anything that the governor may have done to try to benefit personally from his position. It has to do with the relationship between the governor and the legislature and how exactly that's supposed to work.
Right. And I think it goes beyond mere disagreement. I mean, you can obviously you have inherently a clashes between the legislature and the governor. The legislature takes a shorter term view of things. Representatives are up every 2 years for election, senators 4 and 2 years. So they take a shorter term and they represent their district. While they are state representatives and state senators, they still are very much focused on a more immediate, smaller area within the state in a shorter time frame, whereas the chief executive, the governor, is looking statewide, longer term, as he should or she should as governor be doing that. And, of course, those different worldviews, there are inherent clashes, and we expect those clashes. But this is not simply about policy differences or differences in approach or whether one is more competent than the other, whether the legislature thinks that the governor isn't doing a very good job as a governor. It goes way beyond that. This actually is a constitutional crisis, a crisis of power, and the governor ignoring the legitimate power entrusted by the Constitution in the legislature to legislate, to approve programs, to expand programs, to remove programs, and to fund those programs. When you start sidestepping that, then you've got a constitutional crisis. It's not just merely disagreement or dislike of a person individually or personal differences, although there's been plenty of that. There's been plenty of disagreement politically and public policy and personality clashes. But this is a fundamental clash of power between the chief executive and the legislature. And the legislature finally has said enough. And I think the catalyst here that's gotten us to this point was the arrest on December 9, where that unfortunately took that dramatic event to move the legislature forward. Although there's been talk of impeachment now for at least the last couple of years.
So now the action, having been taken now in the House, the action will shift to the Senate. Mm-hmm. And the way that we talk about this is we explain to people, well, the way that this works is that the House votes to impeach,
right,
and then the action shifts to the Senate where right. There will be a trial. We use the word trial.
Oh, yes.
But this is not... This doesn't work the way that a trial in a criminal court
works. It's not a criminal trial. Definitely not. It is a trial, and the Senate will behave as if they are all judges. They will be sworn in, and under oath they will swear to uphold the ends of justice. and that they will hear the evidence and they will conduct a fair proceeding, and that they will, through this process, which they will delineate through their rulemaking in really uncharted area. A lot of commentators have already suggested that this is truly unprecedented. So they are setting up rules. As a starting point, they looked at the Clinton impeachment rules that they used in Washington, for instance, as a starting point. I don't think you're going to see those rules as this unfolds. I think you're going to see a process where the Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court will preside, will convene the sessions, will oversee it. However, I think the rules will be such that they're adopted by probably two-thirds of the members, subject to suspension or amendment by a simple majority, and that they will then, as evidence issues come up, they will rule yes or no on a majority vote. What evidence comes in, what evidence doesn't, who is heard as far as witness testimony. I think there's actually under consideration a bar to senators themselves testifying. So you're looking at a very streamlined, tightly run trial, but it's certainly not a criminal trial.
But would we expect at least the shape to be something that we'd be familiar with? That is, a member, a senator perhaps, will be designated to act as prosecutor.
There will be an opportunity for
the governor to have representation, and there'll be witnesses and questioning and so forth?
And my speculation is just that, my conjecture that I just described, from what I'm hearing, these are things that are under consideration, and we'll have to wait till the final rules are adopted by the Senate. And I'm sure it'll be the new Senate that adopts them after January 14th. But I suspect what'll happen is, just as you just described it, yes, the governor can attend himself, can defend himself or through counsel. I would expect that there would be a prosecutor. I don't think it'll be a House member. I don't think, in fact, it'll be a General Assembly member. A prosecutor may be appointed. All that remains to be seen. But there will be somebody who puts on the case. An opportunity to defend will be certainly within that process. In that sense, we'll see it as kind of a judicial-type proceeding, a trial. Once the evidence is heard and considered and arguments made, then it takes two-thirds of the 59 state senators to vote yes for conviction. Or for the governor to prevail, he needs to convince at least 20 state senators to vote against conviction. Mm-hmm. I think that would be, from my vantage point, listening to the evidence and listening to what I've heard so far and assuming it continues in that vein, I think that'd be highly unlikely.
Just to bring people up to speed here this morning, if you have not heard, the Illinois House voted to impeach Governor Rod Blagojevich, an unprecedented action that sets the stage for a Senate trial on whether he should be thrown out of office for corruption and abuse of power. The governor, Mr. Blagojevich, is the first Illinois governor to be impeached. We think that now, as our guest here, Rick Winkle, has explained, the action will shift to the Senate, and it is thought that the trial would begin later this month, maybe
around January 26th. That's what's being talked about.
Our guest here, Rick Winkle, he is a visiting senior fellow at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I, Urbana-Champaign, also an adjunct professor of law here at the U of I. He served both in the Illinois State Senate and the Illinois House. We do have a caller here, and we would like to give people the opportunity here. We have maybe about 5 or 6 minutes. If folks who are listening would like to pose a question, I know that Rick would do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller is in Champaign, and it's line number one. Hello.
Yes, Senator Winkle. My only concern, and I think in terms of procedural due process, I've seen that throughout the committee, and I think even today's House deliberation, even though it was surprisingly short. And I enjoyed your commentary concerning the procedures that the Senate will use to try the governor. But my question is, and maybe you have a quick answer to it, when we look at federal impeachment, and of course President Clinton is the poster child of that, the standard is high crimes and misdemeanors, and that's outlined in the Constitution of the United States. What's the standard for impropriety warranting impeachment under the Illinois Constitution that Governor Blagojevich is being held to?
The 1870 Illinois Constitution talked in terms of misdemeanors, which back then in that day meant official misconduct. The 1970 state constitution, Illinois Constitution, does not have that phrase, nor was one put in to replace it. So we don't have that guidance, but we know that it's not simply misdemeanors in the sense of it being a petty offense. Rather, it's official misconduct of an extraordinary type. And if you read the report that came out of the investigative committee, they go at great lengths in the January 8th report that came out. They go at great lengths to explain that because of the way it's drafted in the Constitution, there's not a precise standard delineated or defined. Rather, it's up to each individual member to swear, in the case of the Senate, to do justice, to listen to the evidence and to be fair, and let him or her decide the case. And looking at the totality of the evidence and looking at the idea of fairness and making sure that the process gives an opportunity for the governor to present his defense and that all the evidence is considered, that's really about it. There is, you know, the House is directed by the Constitution to look for a cause of impeachment, and that's really it. And it's the sole discretion of the House to make that determination, and that's what you saw happen today. The Senate will be charged very similarly with reflecting on their own sense of right and wrong, their own sense of a duty and conscience, and they will then vote, and it takes two-thirds of those senators to vote for conviction, or conversely, a third to vote not to convict, to exonerate the governor.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. A number of the senators a number of the members of the House, the representatives, in their comments indicated that they, first of all, thought this was very serious. This was a very serious moment, and that was a very serious thing that they were engaged in.
Indeed.
And also commented on the fact that it had never happened before.
Right.
And one in particular said something that made me want to ask this question. Do you think that now having the fact that this has now occurred, does that make it any easier or any more likely that some future House would take the same action against a future governor?
Well, I think when you heard the various representatives speak today, many of they were very thoughtful, many of them, and very cognizant of the fact that they were setting precedent. They were being very careful in making sure that in the future, future General Assemblies would look back, a future House of Representatives, that body would look back and be able to see that you're talking about something very serious here. It's not merely, and that's why I said this earlier, it's not merely political disagreement. It's not you don't like the way the governor's running the administration. You'd like to see somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. Although it is a political remedial type of proceeding, it is, David, as you put it, an historic and very serious undoing of a elected official. I mean, the people have spoken and elected Rod Blagojevich governor. And by this action, the legislature is undoing that. And so for that to happen in a democracy like ours, you have to take that extremely seriously. And I would hope, of course, that that's going to become very clear in the record as we move forward so that future General Assemblies can see that, learn from it, and take that to heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully, you know, this is 177 years, 176 years, first time ever. Someone said they'd like to see another 176 where it doesn't happen again. I'd like to see it never happen again. This is a very, very serious undoing of a democratic action where the people have elected somebody, and it should be done in extraordinarily rare circumstances.
Let us talk with some other folks. Next is someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning. Representative Weigel, I'd like to get your opinion on two things. One, how might this incident be used to really clean up Illinois government? Certainly,
right.
Actions of Governor Blagojevich are not unique to either him or the governor's office. And many other appointments take place in Illinois
right.
based on a pay-to-play, sorry about the dog, kind of system.
No, I understand your point. Your point's well taken.
Right.
Where do we go from here? And I think...
What kind of legislation
right.
you know, is needed or oversight is needed? And the second question has to do with, and this is outside of your domain, but we see other executives, the federal executive, extending their purview, breaking federal and international law, and the United States Congress doing nothing about it.
Well, I mean, any time where you don't have checks and balances, where things there's not sufficient oversight, the process is not respected, where you have one-party rule in particular, you see this kind of thing happen. So it's not unique. No, it's not unique to Illinois. Where does Illinois go from here? I expect that upon conviction, and I think conviction will happen here, and by the way, presumption of innocence is a trial court, criminal case kind of concept. I think that for those of us who are watching this and weighing the evidence, I think we can certainly fairly weigh in on an opinion as to whether or not there will be conviction. I think there will be. But where do we go from here if there is a conviction by mid-February, let's say, and Governor Quinn, Lieutenant Governor Quinn becomes a governor? He's already announced that he's looking at a former prosecutor leading a conference or a summit that would examine the various ways of tightening the regulation and protecting the process. The whole idea of impeachment is not to punish the governor. The whole idea of impeachment is to protect the people from somebody who's abused power. And so the next steps have to be, how do we make sure that this never happens again and pass laws and put regulatory processes in place to protect the people from this sort of abuse in the future? And Governor Quinn, hopefully he will become governor, has talked about initiating that kind of process and protecting the people in the future.
We have about a minute, and I'm sorry to say we cannot have a couple of callers we cannot take. I certainly will continue to follow the story and continue to talk about it. One quick question. Do you think that this will add to the numbers of people who would support the notion of recall?
Well, the irony here, I suppose, is ironic, and maybe it's tragic. The tragedy here is that we could have had recall. We could have bypassed all of this. I mean, it certainly could have been considered. It was blocked in the state Senate, unfortunately. It came out of the House and was blocked in the state Senate, and the people were not given that opportunity in the last election to make that kind of decision. I have to think that it adds to the fuel to the fire of reform that maybe a more direct populist approach like recall might be considered.
Mm-hmm. Well, at that, we will leave it. I want to thank the folks who called, and also thank very much Rick Winkle for coming in here on very short notice to talk a little bit about the events of the day. Rick is a visiting senior fellow in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I. He also served in the Illinois State Senate and in the Illinois House. Thank you very much.
Thank you.